Pasadena Dietrich, I'm director of the Urban and Regional Analysis Program here at the University Center for Social and Urban Research. Bob Braddock's been organizing the brown bags. I want to thank Tom. He's our project manager for our Pittsburgh Neighborhood and Community Information System. And we're very happy today to welcome Dennis Keating from Cleveland State. Dennis is the Lynn College Distinguished Professor. He's also a professor in the Cleveland Marshall College of Law and director of the Masters in Urban Planning, Design, and Development program at Cleveland State. He's done lots and lots of work on housing and affordable housing, community development, neighborhood work, sits on a million organizations and boards, and well as teaching lots of planning classes, a planning capstone, the senior seminar, Contemporary Urban Problems, and Dennis said he's teaching Shrinking Cities this term with some students who are doing some work on Pittsburgh as well. So we've got some cross Cleveland connections in usual fashion. We went to Cleveland several years ago, and Bob and Ben, we were then on a tour afterwards of Slavic Village, so we learned a lot about community development from Dennis's writings, from papers and presentations at our planning meetings and urban affairs, as well as some practical advice and practical skills kinds of things that he teaches students. So he's a great planning academic and lawyer by training. Today he's going to be talking about the community development, what I would call rethinking in Cleveland, and somebody who spent long time in community development. I'll let Dennis give you an introduction to the different pieces Bob sent around on the Neighborhood Progress Inc. It's kind of a full circle for us because we had we've had Mike Schramm here talking about the kinds of things they do with the information in Cleveland. We had Frank Ford, who's Vice President of Research in Neighborhood Progress Inc., talking about MPI's work with foreclosure. And last year we had Chris Walker from LISC talking about evaluation and sustainable communities. So it's nice to see somebody who's going to tell us about the community development infrastructure of one of our cities that we spend time learning about. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you, Smita. Pleasure to be here. I'm a pretty baby boomer, born in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, so I have memories of Pittsburgh, including climbing up the cliff to Forbes Field, where the Pittsburgh Pirates once played. Pleasure to be back here. We in Cleveland have followed Pittsburgh in a lot of comparisons back and forth. And you have a convention center relatively new. We have one that will be built by next year. You have a gambling casino. We now have a downtown gambling casino. You have a meds and eds district here. We have one in the University Circle. You have sports teams. I understand in addition to the losing baseball team like us, you have a professional football team. We, on the other hand, have the Cleveland Browns. Soon to be owned by your minority owner, who will take over the miserable Cleveland Browns next month when the NFL closes. So, what I want to do is give you some background for those of you who are not familiar with the community development movement and activists in Cleveland. I'm sure some of you are familiar with a lot of this. Then I'll talk about our situation that they're facing, at least the not-so-pretty picture of what's happening in Cleveland. And I want to talk about the recent developments with community development corporations, including their rethinking their future. And I believe you have access to a report that was done by my colleagues, Lynn Pumbles and Kathy Hexter, presented at a neighborhood summit meeting in May in Cleveland, and I'll talk about their ideas for what directions CDCs might take, as well as some others, and then be happy to try to answer any questions you might have. So we are considered a model of community development. This goes back to the late 70s, early 80s, when the community organizing basically faded in Cleveland, but left behind some fledgling community development corporations. This is when the foundations and the banks basically cut off funding for community organizations after a famous incident in which they picketed some of the civic leaders and their lawyers out in a place called Hunt Valley Hunt Club, which was not appreciated by leading civic figures. And shortly after that, the funding dried up, along with the Reagan administration cut them off some funding. So from about 1981, there was a growth in community development corporations. We now have, roughly, depending on your definition, about 30 of them citywide. We have 36 planning areas. Several of those are creations of members of the city council in Cleveland, formerly 21 of them, now down to 17, mainly using community development block grant money to fund either ones they created or others. 1981, with the help of my colleague, Warren Crumlin, still one of the strong teams of 85, in teaching, the Cleveland Housing Network was formed. That was the idea being that they would coordinate and manage and try to get funding to assist the individual community development corporations, or CDCs, in Cleveland. That's now grown to 19 CDCs. They've got a staff of about 100. They're a nationally recognized model for this sort of thing. And they're at the 30-year mark. Then in 1988, we had a couple foundations that have been leaders, as well as some corporations at the time, was BP America, then headquartered in Cleveland, now having left us in Chicago, after they bought Amco. Story goes that basically the Cleveland Gun Foundation became tired of being besieged by requests by individual community organizations and decided to form an entity that would coordinate funding for community development organizations. Out of that emerged the Neighborhood Progress Inc., which I guess some of you heard about in the report. Their first director being Tom Cox, who later came worked with one of your former mayors. Since 1988, supported by those two foundations and several others, as well as the city of Cleveland and some corporations, they have mainly focused on real estate and the development of housing, and in particular they focused on a small number of these CDCs, which caused, as you might imagine, some tension, mainly six in particular, considered the strongest, best able to develop housing. And that's all true. They've since expanded that a bit, but for the past 20 years or so until we cracked it, Cleveland, they became a major entity for funding, including the Cleveland Housing Network. We also had the unusual situation of having, in addition to those two intermediaries, two national intermediaries with offices in Cleveland, LISC, and the Enterprise Foundation, community partners. And while they still have some presence in Northeast Ohio, we no longer have those individual offices, but particularly with the Enterprise Foundation assisting in low-income housing, particularly the Cleveland Housing Network, which pioneered the lease purchase idea, in which people at the poverty level virtually getting Section 8 funding could obtain a house if they managed to last 15 years as tenants, with a lot of support from the Cleveland Housing Network. So they are considered a model for that particular idea of promoting low-income home ownership. So that's the basic picture in terms of who the cast of characters are. Then a bit about the problems they faced. We led the nation, virtually speaking, of Slavic Village in the foreclosure crisis, only about 1999 to 2000 in a working class neighborhood by the old industrial valley, Slavic Village. They noticed a very strange thing with no particular increase in the quality of housing and continued population decline. All of a sudden, housing prices started to increase rapidly. And as it turned out, it was predatory lending, including a lot of mortgage fraud. Many of those people now serving time in various jails, federal and state. Slavic Village Development, one of our strongest community development organizations, and I'll talk about that at the end as well. Began their studies of what was happening and basically discovered that unregulated mortgage brokers were preying upon residents, including the elderly residents of this neighborhood, sucking them into predatory loans, even though many of them have long since paid off the loans to buy their houses. So a neighborhood that, while not strong, you might say, high on growing poverty rates, older housing, a lot of social problems, but they had made considerable progress over roughly 20 years. All of a sudden had hundreds, now thousands, of abandoned, vacant, foreclosed homes, largely due to the targeting of that neighborhood by predatory lenders, particularly out of state. Then spread citywide, so by the middle of the decade, before the national crisis, foreclosures had shot up two and three times the normal rate, spread to many neighborhoods. The city of Cleveland attempted to pass legislation to regulate this, which they did, only to be preempted by the state of Ohio, the legislature, and later the Supreme Court of Ohio. So that attempt failed and basically continued. At one point, if you read the New York Times Magazine article by Alex Kopowitz in 2008, Slaughter Village per capita led the nation in foreclosures. Scene is also a movie, Cleveland versus Wall Street, in which the city sued 21 of the largest holders of foreclosed homes in Cleveland, led by Deutsche Bank, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. That was thrown out by the federal courts, but the film was made by a Swiss filmmaker as to what would happen if they had ever gotten to an actual trial. I wonder if it'll end in this, maybe a chance to see Cleveland versus Wall Street. It's a heroic effort by people in Slavic Village and others to bring the large banks that end up owning a lot of this property, owning as trustees, to pay damages and compensation to the city of Cleveland. Alas, that didn't happen. 2005, the vacant properties campaign was brought to Cleveland as to what might be done. Frank Ford is the chair of a group that's been in existence since 2006, the Vacant Properties Action Task, to try to coordinate efforts to combat foreclosures. The county, Cuyahoga County, in which Cleveland's located, then formed a foreclosure prevention program. My colleague, Kathleen Hepster, has written several reports about the effectiveness of that, as well as reforming some of the foreclosure procedures. Nevertheless, the curve was up and running due to the maps, but basically spread throughout the city, then spread to the more suburbs, including where I live, Cleveland Heights, so that the suburban mayors began to grow extremely nervous about what was happening. That foreclosure crisis has continued, despite the fact we have one of the most active, innovative housing court judges in the United States, one of the heroes of the effort to turn back the tide. He's been doing things like fining out-of-state corporations millions of dollars for their refusal to clean up their properties. Unfortunately, his ability to do that was overruled by our wonderful Supreme Court, so his powers are limited. Also filed in by Frank Ford of Neighborhood Progress to try to stop the sale by bottom-feeding speculators selling Cleveland houses for $500 on the internet. Prevent those recirculating and adding to the problems we have. Unfortunately, that suit didn't go anywhere either. So if you want to buy a house for $500, typically already condemned by the city of Cleveland, a lot of people around the world have suffered into miles. Empty, vacant, nuisance properties in the city. The number of foreclosures has actually declined a bit the last couple of years in the city of Cleveland, but the latest count as of February was 16,000 vacant abandoned homes in the city of Cleveland, with several thousand condemned already. The ability of the city to cope with the overwhelming surge in foreclosures and abandonment is pretty limited. They used up the money they had, and then have gone through three rounds of federal neighborhood stabilization money, a lot of which was used for demolitions, but the magnitude of it far exceeds their ability to tear the structures down. I think only about 6 or 7 year demolitions. Now it's been up to the last couple years, about 1,000. So in 2009, at the urging of the mayors, Cleveland and the inner suburbs, our group working on this was able to go down to Columbus, get the state legislature to approve the creation of a countywide land bank. The city of Cleveland has a land bank dating back to the 1970s. That was when Cleveland lost 25% of its population. A land bank was formed, and it's a land bank that simply accepts empty lots that are taxed on one claim for properties foreclosed on by the county and then cleared. Buildings, most of which went in the heyday of nonprofit developments or nonprofit CDCs building affordable housing, or also side lots giving the neighbors a chance to buy an empty lot. So if you want to buy a lot in Cleveland for $100, I have to fill out a 14-page form into the own property in the city of Cleveland, courtesy of our city land bank. The county land bank as opposed to that, is modeled on the Flint, Michigan, Genesee County Land Bank. It's got wide powers to acquire property, hold property, demolish property, fix property up, sell property, hold land for future development. It has a regularized funding source from the county through collection of delinquent fees and taxes through the county. It also has bonding authority. It's already floating the bond. Since it began operation in 2010, I think it's certainly enjoyed great success. If you go on their website and check out their latest statistics, they're now up to about 1,300 demolitions. Most of the work they've done has been demolitions. They've been doing that for a long time. They also have a groundbreaking arrangement with Fannie Mae, which has a lot of property in Cleveland. And under that agreement, they have first crack. Although Fannie Mae hasn't exactly lived up to the agreement, but nonetheless, they're supposed to get first crack at anything under $25,000. And then Fannie Mae, since most of this is junk property that has to be demolished, Fannie Mae will send a check for half the cost of demolishing the house to the Cuyahoga County Land Utilization Corporation or Land Bank. So, in terms of the heroes, people in Slavic Village, our housing court judge, people working at the land bank, Frank Ford and others that make a good progress of all in trying to both halt the flow of foreclosures and deal with the thousands and thousands of abandoned properties plaguing the neighborhoods. A lot of that land, by the way, is now being used as in Philadelphia and Detroit and those cities for agriculture. So we have a project sponsored by Neighborhood Progress called Reimagining in Northern Sustainable Cleveland, in which dozens of empty lots have been turned into community gardens, in which we have hundreds. We also have four working farms now in Cleveland, profits and nonprofit, and there'll probably be a lot more. Also, a lot of the empty lots are being used, including Slavic Village neighborhood, for greenways, greenway connectors, and also the sewer district under EPA order to deal with stormwater runoff in the Lake Erie. Is going to be using a lot of those vacant lots for water, rainwater catchment basements to prevent a lot of the stuff flowing into the lake. And finally, Neighborhood Progress Inc. and six of our CDCs began a project in the midst of this crisis about 4 years ago to give some hope for the future. And they have selected model blocks in the six neighborhoods, and the idea is to go in, knock down what could be saved, save what might be salvaged, fill in the empty lots with new housing, and also organized to prevent further foreclosures. The goal was to build all 300 homes and prevent 100 foreclosures over a 3 or 4 year period, and they pretty much achieved those goals. However, that's a rather small and largely, I think, symbolic effort to at least give hope that once the crisis passes, whenever that is, neighborhoods can be rebuilt, or at least parts of neighborhoods. Our slogan, of course, is, we're not Detroit yet. Follow this sad situation. With the latest census in Detroit, they have 120,000 vacant land homes with their plan to relocate people from the 1/4 of Detroit, 40 square miles, that's empty. We're not in that situation. A population loss. 2010 census, Cleveland went from 478,000 in 2000 to 397,000, and we continue to drop in population. So obviously, in terms of a market for housing, with a declining population, with at least 16,000 or more vacant homes that are no longer to be demolished. Housing prices in Cleveland are now, with a slight bump in the last couple of months, at 2,000 levels. And the county just did the reevaluation of property values, and the property values in Cleveland went down 20%. So the prospect of CDCs, with whatever subsidies they could get, reviving the nonprofit affordable housing market under those conditions, obviously, is problematic. Even if people could get loans from the lenders, which, of course, in Cleveland and some other places is extremely difficult. Other things you should know about, we're number two, Detroit's number nine, in urban poverty, relatively speaking, for large cities. The mayor of Cleveland has said that the future of the city depends upon public education. Our school system is one of the worst in the country, a huge drop-off in enrollment. A large part of the enrollment went to charter schools, of which we have about 50. On November 6th, Cleveland will vote on a levy, the largest in history, to try to help out the public schools. Cleveland last passed a school levy in 1996. And last week, the state of Ohio's ratings came out, and Cleveland schools got F's, failures in every single category, the lowest score ever for the state of Ohio. So, persuading the voters in about a month to pump a lot of money into the Cleveland school system is going to be a hard sell. The Catholic Diocese last year closed 50 parishes and their schools in northeast Ohio, not just in Cleveland. Several of the Cleveland parishes fought back, went to the Vatican, got the Vatican to rule that the enforcer, who came from Boston, where he closed Boston Catholic schools, had violated, believe it or not, papal law on closings, and they actually won, so that several of those parishes and both of their schools are now reopened, and hopefully will survive whatever he does next. Finally, as you might expect, in addition to poverty, we've got a higher than normal unemployment rate, but in the black community, an extremely high unemployment rate. And in terms of health care and health, generally, there are great disparities between whites and blacks, city and suburbs. So, that's our situation other than the booster talk we hear from the Chamber of Commerce or the Greater Cleveland Partnership. So what's happening with CDC is under these pretty dire circumstances. Well, first of all, as I already said, the housing efforts that they engaged in with support from the Neighborhood Progress and the foundations and city and corporations that funded that pretty much dried up a couple of years ago for lack of a market, for the inability of people to get loans, and just really lack of housing out there. Cleveland Housing Network survives by managing a lot of what's been built over the previous 20 years, so they are surviving, but under more limited circumstances. There have been some mergers. This is a hot topic on what's happened here, but there have been several mergers with the stronger CDCs taking on some of the, shall we say, smaller CDCs. However, there's been some pushback against that. A couple of recent talks failed, one by a 5-vote margin of the membership of the CDC in Shaker Square and the Buckeye neighborhood. So to what extent, given the smaller city, all the problems, not to mention financial, the Cleveland CDC has been studied done by my colleague Kathy Hexter in conjunction with the report that some of us have read. I found that about 2/3 of the CDC's reporting income went down, not too surprisingly, 2009-2010. So you've got a lot of CDCs on the margin financially, but previously have been mostly focused on developing housing, for which they would get development fees and other income, and now that is not happening. So that's one of the factors going into discussions there. NPI got a new leader, Joel Rackman. He came from Youngstown, Mahoning Valley, about a year or so ago, and NPI has then gone through a reassessment of its role in Cleveland with a lot of input from the community, a fair number of criticisms about being a top-down, non-transparent organization focused exclusively on real estate development. And that became the topic of a May 17th neighborhood summit in Cleveland, in which the CDC folks, a lot of the city folks, the foundation people, basically heard a discussion about what's could be our future directions, which I'll get to in a moment. There was a follow-up meeting just last month at our college. NPI hasn't exactly revealed its new directions, except that Joel announced that it would focus a lot more on community building and community organizing, which he was known for, supported by the Wings Foundation down in the Holy Valley and Youngstown. So I don't know that people quite know what that means yet. But clearly there's going to be some change of direction, and this is probably the, with the Cleveland Housing Network, the most important network organization we have, although whatever they do, since they get sustained funding from the Cleveland Gun Foundations, one would assume that the major foundations supporting them would have to agree, generally speaking, with a change of direction. So what the Cleveland Gun and Mandel Foundations and others think about the discussions and the change of direction we did on that. We also have another network organization called the Cleveland Neighborhood Development Corporation. It's been around for about a dozen years. It is, it calls itself a trade group representing the CDCs and other business merchant type groups in our neighborhoods. They are in dire financial shape, and there are now discussions between Neighborhood Progress and this trade organization, which does do some lobbying, as to whether there might be some arrangement. I'm not sure it's a merger exactly. We also have Cleveland Lives, which is a basically a one-person operation promoting Cleveland neighborhoods in the attempt to get people out of state or come to live in their Cleveland neighborhoods. And there is at least some back-channel discussion about their being absorbed. So it's conceivable that MPI might affiliate or have some kind of arrangement with these two other organizations, if only because they might not have money, which will not be a good thing. It would still be a confidence in the future of Cleveland neighborhoods. So that brings me to the discussions about what might be future directions for these 30 or so community development corporations that have been around now for up to 30 some years. And at the summit, my colleagues, Kathy Hexter and Lon Kremble, presented their take, having interviewed lots of folks, just as our former colleague, Chase Western, had done a similar study for MPI about what its future might be. And they came up with four strategies, which you can read. I guess the name of the thing is accessible. First thing they talked about was community building. As I said, back in around 1980, direct funding for community organizing, however innocuous and sanitary in terms of politics it was basically cut off from the CDCs. Over the years, they would say, however, they have people on their staff who do organizing, whether it's with block clubs or it's some other form of at least involving folks. Most of our CDCs in Cleveland do not have membership by residents. That's a rarity. So we're mostly organizations with the staff, a board that represents the neighborhood, but no actual members. What they talked about was community building, asset management, that sort of thing. So maybe not calling it community organizing, but trying to, particularly in the wake of the foreclosure crisis and the abandonment issue, doing more of whatever you think about community organizing, community building. Read about that. I think one could argue that's already happened, but they talked about perhaps enlarging that role, and maybe that's what Neighborhood Progress and its current leader had in mind. Second, they say we should figure out a way to continue dealing with housing other than managing what's already been built. However, maybe there should be a shift either in priority or in funding, looking more to rental housing, not so much what they've been doing over the years, which was largely focused on single-family affordable housing, affordable housing by Cleveland standards. Everything is subsidized. Every house in Cleveland that's been built in the last 20 years gets a 15-year tax abatement among other subsidies. So those tax abatements, which take money away from the crippled, financially troubled school district, compounds their problems. But they think there should be a housing element. There has been, and whenever we get something resembling a more normal market in Cleveland, presumably the largest builders over the last decades have been the nonprofit CDCs, and very little for-profit development, other than a few projects downtown and our University Circle equivalent in this area. Third, they said education should be a target. Now, given the state of Cleveland public schools, not everybody, I think, has led to the idea of CDCs having much to do with the schools. They've been, as you might imagine, closing schools. In the last couple of years, they closed over 20 schools for lack of students. Nevertheless, the idea is that some of the CDCs have worked to prevent school closings. Slotted Village is everybody's model. They have a partnership called the P16 initiative or something like that here, in which, with a foundation from a savings and loan, which is historic, in Saudi Village, and I had a chance to meet the city and said, stay in this neighborhood, build a new headquarters, is financing, or did finance a senior housing project across the streets, and with the foundation, with the school district, and with some other partners, they are promoting a preschool through college program to try to basically support kids in that neighborhood to make it through. The Cleveland Public School dropout rate is over 50%, so if they can get through Cleveland Public Schools and hopefully get to the community college, which will end up in Cleveland State University or college, and go on to a successful life after that. So this program is being used there and a couple other neighborhoods, and there are a few other examples. So their notion is that whatever happens on November 6th, that schools still play a bigger role, even though there are a lot fewer students, there are a lot fewer schools, and the school district, under its current leader, they've been through about three superintendents in the last several years, but hopefully, in fact, welcome any partners who can do anything to help out the school district. Would welcome some help from the CDCs, although I think most CDCs have never seen themselves doing anything to do with the schools, strictly employment, housing, jobs, that sort of thing. Their final suggestion was healthcare, looking toward the Affordable Health Care Act and the re-election of the president, I believe, and the funding that will come through that act, Obamacare funding for community health centers. We have a series of city clinics. We also have a free clinic. We have one public hospital left, the Metro Hospital in Cleveland. The Cleveland Clinic, on the side, I mentioned in the debate, has actually partnered with one of the neighborhoods adjacent to it, one of three very poor African-American neighborhoods, and with other institutions, University of St. Louis, paying people to move into those neighborhoods, although they have a full lot of takers, I think 16, in the Fairfax neighborhood. But in any event, the idea would be that the CDCs can play some role in expanding healthcare, particularly since we have, I think, the worst record in the United States in lead abatement for children. A large percentage of the children in the Cleveland public schools, those that are left, are living on the poverty line. Poor health schools have laid off counselors, nurses, and others due to their financial problems. So, to the extent the CDCs can play a role in expanding healthcare or supporting the health funds we have, and particularly, I guess, having access to the federal money that might come through for that, the idea is that they can expand their role, particularly in education and healthcare, and that's been talked about nationally. There are a few examples of Massachusetts. If you can show Forbes magazine, or a recent article is about the community development organizations playing a greater role in providing healthcare in their communities. And clearly there's a financial squeeze in Cleveland, even if the foundation support and the city support continues, although with community development funding likely to be cut again. That means we have the same number of CDCs, a lot of them will get less money from the city or through the city council. And they're not going to have the money they used to get from developing housing, where to get funding to survive, and I think the healthcare option is the one where there might be some financial potential for CDCs depending on what their role is. So I think with that, I will stop. That's basically what I can report. Basically, we have lots of questions and no answers yet.
Let's see what people are thinking about.
Talk a little bit more about the May 17th summit and what the overall purpose of that was and what you see maybe coming out of that.
Let's see, was there an official version? This was to drive the community development system in Cleveland forward by preserving what worked best, value involvement as a system that was even more effective, efficient, and creative. And we are here to align around a shared vision and basically deal with current and future issues. Basically, I think the idea was there have been some of these in the past, but with Joel Ratner taking over Neighborhood Progress, we're working in the background to help some of the organizations dealing with their problems and possible mergers. I think the idea was this was an opportune time
the foundation support and really have a large discussion about what the future might hold. So it was pretty much a discussion around the role of MPI, even though it hadn't revealed exactly what it intended to do. But there was a study done about their future, and then Kathy and Norman did their report, which I just summarized for you about what their thoughts about what options might exist. And then there was a lot of group discussions as to how that might work out. Same with the follow-up meeting, you know, basically nothing's resolved. At least people are confronting publicly some of the realities. There's also a couple of these CDCs that involves Ohio City, if you're familiar with Cleveland, celebrating the 100th anniversary of our public market. We just had the International Public Market Conference in Cleveland. They are promoting commercial development in a bustling area with more group hubs than I can count now. In the Broadway, Detroit-Shoreway neighborhood, they have created an arts district with the restoration of the old theater. It took about 25 years, but they finally put it off. So a couple of the CDCs have branched off into other more promising avenues without whatever happens, generally speaking. It was that kind of discussion about what might we do differently in the future as opposed to the past and what's been going on.
You mentioned that some of the CDCs have been consolidating or were talking about it. What's been going on with the intermediary organizations?
What's been going on? Well, as I said, MPI, I think, is headed in some different direction. Their longtime director retired about a year ago, so the new person basically came in with a strategic plan. We're going to reassess our role. We're going to get a lot of feedback, which was not necessarily positive, but they got. The housing network, I think, is just trying to hang on, not lay people off, manage the housing that's already there. They did the development in the 6 target areas. I mentioned the model blocks, which accounts for most of what's been built the last several years. And as far as I know, they're bringing in there, but no signs yet of any kind of revival of the housing development that's been going on before.
I don't know how many of the parallels you're aware of between the things going on there and the things going on here.
Blissfully picking
up. Our primary intermediary, Pittsburgh Partnership for Neighborhood Development, which was run for many years by Tom Cox's nemesis. At any rate, just did another study, and it's out there, and everybody's waiting to see where they're going to head. But I'm curious about your comments about the complete lack of a market and the property values being so low and banks not lending at all, to the way you describe it. If there's pockets of market activity, one of the things that I think Pittsburgh has been doing successfully is trying to target housing development in areas between viable markets and less so, and stretch that. It's not a new strategy for for-profit people, but I think for communities it's been a little more effective, and I'm wondering if there's anything like that going on in Cleveland.
Well, I believe we have two areas that might be described as healthy. One is downtown, where there was a big push to increase the population of downtown Cleveland. A lot of those cities have been making some progress before the crash. Although some was supposedly market rate. There isn't such thing as market rate in Cleveland, but there was development, particularly conversion of vacant buildings, which had happened earlier in the warehouse district in Cleveland. The rental occupancy rate was reported recently as 97% in downtown Cleveland, so to the extent there's rental housing, although it's not related to the nonprofit sector, that's a good sign. And then the University Circle, as I told Sabina, there's a big project going up, again, for market rate, whatever that can be called, in Cleveland, University Circle. So it's the one healthy area with the Cleveland Clinic and the Case Western Reserve and the institutions that are there, including the other hospital. There's some housing out there, otherwise, pretty bleak.
Cut his plantar teeth at East Liberty when he was a young new master's in city planning person, and East Liberty's a really different place yet again. He was there when it was going under its urban renewal phase, and some people here have been in the CDC in East Liberty, and it's been a very successful CDC. We've had some other neighborhoods where our CDCs are no longer in business, and the neighborhoods have, I think, suffered for the lack of CDC. I remember one time in a paper, Norm wrote, in what community development has achieved, and sometimes if a neighborhood's not doing all that well, or a lot of the indicators aren't improving, it's, you know, that a lot of times the Community Development Corporation is helping it not get worse, but at least maintain and not get worse. But I think in some of our neighborhoods that have lost CDCs, you know, say the neighborhoods have gotten worse, but they have not improved. We've got a lot of different neighborhoods in Cleveland, but what that community development, in the way you're more organizing your community development network and through community housing network, that's has to have been a plus for even some of the most impoverished places.
That shouldn't be.
And now, what's that? That's the first part. The second part is how will that be rethought with this new approach?
Well, there are some positives. For example, Central, which is not very far from University, the next poorest neighborhood in Cleveland, largely depopulated a decade ago, became a home opportunity zone, and now it's a neighborhood of choice site under that particular program. They built, again before the crash, with Habitat for Humanity as well, several hundred homeowner new homes filling up the empty spaces there. They also just launched, I guess, within the last several weeks, a large urban agriculture program with Hoops for year-round gardening, part of something called the Evergreen Co-op. I don't know if people have heard of that. But,
Fiona and Kathy talked about it, yes.
So it's one of the Evergreen Co-op laundry ventures. Cleveland Clinic didn't quite work out, but they are hoping that this will work out in terms of farming, added to our farming sector. They just opened basically a fresh food mobile restaurant to try to provide decent food to people in that general area, which hopefully they will grow in the future. But, considering that was the poorest neighborhood, well, next door, so it's also the neighborhood represented by the current mayor, Fred Jackson. So I think we could say that is some of a success story, although it will probably raise huge. All is not clear.
With the lack of a market and the shift in the CDC focus, how are the relationships between CDCs and other community organizations changing as they might either see threats or collaboration opportunities to collaborate?
Well, as a whole network of social service agencies, I haven't heard of any great conflict between the social service agencies depending on Medicaid funding and the city, community, or state or federal money. Examples of any conflicts. I'm not sure there's a whole lot of collaboration either, because the CDCs are pretty much going to really track the issues of the social service agencies in the same neighborhoods provide services, but don't necessarily have any work with the CDCs in the world. At least that would be
what was the balance of sort of funding and focus to the CDC industry between real estate and non-real estate activities prior to the crash?
Well, having my hand the leader of the Kathy, there's no vice chair here, but let's see. This is 2009-2010. After the funding came from the government, a lot from fees, from real estate fees, top six sources, government grants, rental income, development fees, management fees, and investment income. About two-thirds coming from the city, the county.
But even with the county and the city and the foundation community, how much of that focus was build real estate, build housing, build space, as opposed to quality of life, education, workforce, neighborhood stabilization strategies?
Well, you go where the money is, and the money that came through neighborhood programs is all about development and real estate, trying to trying to rebuild a market in Cleveland neighborhoods by our definition of market. So that's what most groups did. And the top six, like Slava Village and a couple of the other groups, did very well while things were doing
well. Well, building off that question, in today's economy and with the job numbers that just came out and looking at that, One of the good things about at least Pennsylvania and at least the Pittsburgh region as a city, we actually were number two in job creation. What's the process that the community development industry in Cleveland's doing around sort of job attraction, job incubation?
To my knowledge, very little. They just mainly, other than housing, I would say their secondary role is trying to either retain businesses that existed in the commercial strips or attract a new business or a couple of mini shopping centers that were developed. So I think they would say to the extent they created construction jobs, they created or at least retained some commercial retail jobs. And I think a few of them did, when there was money available, did some job training that related to housing or retail, but in terms of actual creating jobs, probably the Scoops agriculture project I just mentioned might be one of the examples where not that they're going to create a huge number of jobs out of a farm, basically, but they would say that's an example of shifting this toward some kind of economic development job creation approach.
Question with the land bank in Cuyahoga County is just a couple years old, and they have, it sounds like they have a certain amount of authority related to housing and so forth. How will the two, or how are the two working together or not working together or potentially competitors? I don't know.
Well, the neighborhood stabilization Round 3, the county land bank was the conduit for the Public Housing Authority, which is largely Cleveland and some of the other suburbs in the city of Cleveland, getting about $40 million. So in terms of the NSP regs, part of it's supposed to develop affordable housing, and the land bank, I think, saw its role as not developing affordable housing only. And I think as of last night when I had the director at my class, they've done about 400 individual rehabs. So to a certain extent, if they can save some of the related housing that can be developed and saved, that would be one role. Yeah, the other longer term would be assembling land that could be used by the CDCs in the future, if and when things turn around. Although the city land bank continues, the city land bank, so they've got 7,000 lots already. So between the city land bank and the county land bank, there would be lots of land. That would be no problem. Other than remediation, of course. We've got a good problem with remediation as we've experienced here.
Have there been efforts to kind of instill community loyalty around the city, or maybe even track it with things like the number of times people buy a house in the neighborhood or move up to a bigger house or things like that?
Well, my colleague Tom Meyer, who directed our housing program, he recently retired. He's known as Dr. Doom. He tracked housing purchase and sales for about 20 years, and what he found was that people moving into the cities before the crash, generally speaking, had no children, or if they had children, they took them to the local schools or another couple of community charters, and that when their children got to about 8th grade level, they hightailed it from the suburbs because they didn't think the high schools in the city, there's one Jesuit high school, they're very expensive. It takes people from the region other than that Jesuit high school. So trying to get people to come into the city with children who intended to stay and send their kids to the public school system, virtually nobody. And then the people leaving, main reasons were crime, terrible reputation for public schools, and people needed a larger house. And even with the tax abatement policy, that seemed to overcome their interest in leaving. We also did have a public employee residence requirement, but our Supreme Court decided, despite unruly, that was unconstitutional. So, good news is, because of the terrible housing crash, the fire and police departments haven't evacuated the city from the suburbs because they can't sell their houses, I think. They're sort of trapped in a few neighborhoods, but eventually, probably, there will be a movement of public employees out of the city, more so in the past they could do those. They could do that.
You mentioned education a bit. Is the school district involved with this whole process?
If they are, it's a secret.
Does Cleveland have sort of an active right-sizing strategy in terms of you have all these vacancies, and are you looking to sort of shrink certain areas and try to concentrate development in particular areas? And then also related to that, are you looking, is there any strategy around for stabilizing existing buildings in the short term, hoping that the market will eventually come back?
Our slogan is, we're not Detroit yet. So I'm Detroit, I'll be following Detroit. The mayor thing has this Detroit works plan, and it's with three neighborhoods, which are people to voluntarily leave the best. Mostly empty spaces, unfortunately, there's no money to do that, to relocate them. As far as I know, he offered to pay free house to anybody who moved into the city, including the public safety forces. The only person that's turned up so far is a chauffeur, I believe. Cleveland, no. The mayor has not, to my knowledge, said anything remotely approaching Detroit or the most important for this 2010 plan. However, in reality, the city's closed one of the police districts. The schools, as I said, have closed a lot of schools. I think, given the city's fairly tight financial situation, they obviously have priorities, so you could argue that maybe, without publicly saying that, the city is trying to consolidate services. There's been no public expression of anything remotely saying we're going to move people out of certain neighborhoods or building zones or anything like that. So, no. As to stabilizing target areas, I think the closest thing to that is this. Called Opportunity Homes, a small experiment of these six model blocks in these six neighborhoods to try to at least give people some hope to stay in those neighborhoods. There's also a huge, ironically, bond to build more schools or replace a lot of them that are collapsing. And we're now through most of that spending, ironically, building schools that are now being closed because there are more students to use them. So what's going to happen with lots of empty school buildings? The Diocese of Cleveland, I think, has sold off about two-thirds of its closed churches, although they had the provision you couldn't have adult entertainment, you couldn't have gambling, you couldn't have drinking. The Catholic Church.
So, MPI and Cleveland have kind of been held up as the national model for CDCs, and what I'm hearing you say is that you're not saying that maybe you didn't get where you wanted to be. There's been a lot of successes, but in 5 or 10 years, you're not where you wanted to be, and you're looking at education. Are you looking at, besides the model blocks, any other innovative sort of projects or ways to approach this besides housing or community organizing, which are, you know, for decades work or don't work in different places?
I think people are waiting to see what MPI will announce as its future mission, and they will also be waiting for the foundation's reaction is in terms of where they put their money, because if the foundations didn't go along with whatever MPI said it was going to do, even if the CDCs were supportive, and I'm not sure a lot of the CDCs, I think they're pretty skeptical, or at least they're waiting to see what that's going to mean for them, particularly the six, mostly the six have gotten a large part of their funding in the past, and that was mostly for development, so are they going to get support in the future, and for what?
Maybe as a follow-up question, what would you have done differently if you had known 10 years ago that to maybe not just focus on housing or maybe something in that space? Is there anything you could think of that you would have said, man, if we would have known that 10 years ago, we would have done that, either in conjunction or instead of the path you guys took?
I think the question about social services, I think if they had gotten much more into partnerships with the health clinics and social service agencies, maybe expanded their organizing efforts as opposed to building houses, might have strengthened them. I'm not sure where the money would come from, and we certainly would have gotten
agencies get involved in identifying and promoting sympathetic candidates for either city, office, or state?
The one time they got into the mayor of politics, the prior mayor, a graduate of our college, basically, we have a neighborhood agenda, and they basically put up a laundry list of all the things that the city should do for neighborhoods, but they, other than few individuals, stay away from any political activity whatsoever. So they've been largely, they're going back to the experience back in 1980, which people have been doing this for decades now. They have long memories, and the idea that if they offended the major funders, they would be cut off in short order, I think it means as a warning. And the city administration, the mayor and city council are very supportive. We have an odd system, I don't know about you, but every city council person gets their own share of the block grant money to do it pretty much as they will as they violate the law. So a lot of that money has been supported by the cities, whatever they do, even some of the creations of the city council person. So I will leave that with that, your imagination.
How has, whether it's Cleveland or Cuyahoga County or the state, addressed the, in terms of the shift and the shrinking public dollars, how have they addressed bringing the private sector capital into the community development system, especially with the shift away from potentially real estate development? How has there been any sort of overtures to the private system other than bank lending? And how has that worked?
Well, I think it's pretty well known in Cleveland that whatever money is going to be out comes through the city or through the neighborhood process. So people do not go to private corporations. Unfortunately, we are, once upon a time, Cleveland was the home to many Fortune 500 headquarters. The Eaton Corporation, I believe, is the last major Fortune 500, the PNC, of course, which took over one of our banks. It's leaving Cleveland, ironically, for city-owned land in the suburbs. So a number of large corporations left in the city of Cleveland are down to a handful of banks and law firms, and they're basically in a functional direction with neighborhood progress, other than paying for the tables at receptions and things.
I wondered if you could talk about public transportation, whether or not there were issues around public transportation that have an impact on the kind of community development. And the other question I had was just kind of looking at the African American community and trying to understand how engaged they are with the CDCs and how organized are they on their own in terms of, are there churches that are involved in kind of neighborhood recovery? Just trying to get a sense of how engaged the community is there.
The first point, I was one of the evaluators along with Bill Kremlitz of the Empowerment Zone program in Cleveland, and that was focused on the three black, poor black neighborhoods that surround Parkland Square, Cleveland Clinic, University Circle, and I don't remember the Empowerment Zone program, a short live Empowerment Zone program. That was supposed to attract businesses to that area or retain business, a small minority-owned business. And while we convinced the federal government, amazingly, our transit agency, to spend $275 million for a fast-track bus system between University Circle and downtown, even though ridership was falling, there came out of that one lesson, the mismatch between where the jobs were, which was way out in the suburbs, and the people in the three neighborhoods who had to play well, we could do this with bus transfers if you're lucky, to get to where most of the entry-level jobs were, because the entry-level jobs did not occur in the economy, which was pretty much disappeared without much of a trace. I can talk about that, that's a different subject. As to the African-American community, there are several CDCs which are based in those neighborhoods, although the irony is the Huff neighborhood where the 1966 riot occurred. It's one time the councilperson died a couple of years ago, and with her died the CDC she created. So there is no CDC in the Huff neighborhood in Cleveland. But there are several that are pretty strongly affiliated. The churches haven't so much of late led those CDCs, they've pretty much gone off and grown. The one great one is the Tomikos Foundation, which came out of the Huff riot. ironically, a Catholic mom and a retired chemical engineer in the United States Midwest Foundation. They're still around, and to the extent anybody is healthy, they're pretty healthy CBC, if they're not healthy.
I was going to ask about Puff. That answers that question.
Well, it lost 2/3 of what was left of its population in the last 20 years, so it's down to a few thousand people. If you go to Cleveland and drive down the main thoroughfare past Cleveland Clinic, you'll see gigantic mansions because there was an attempt to bring back black professionals, particularly in the city of Cleveland, with tax abatements and with subsidized loans and both. A series of uncoordinated, unplanned mansions, virtually all in Chester Avenue, right in the office of Fred Miley.
Dennis, Nick, you talked a lot in the previous questions too about kind of, let's say, community reaction and funder reaction, and then the restructuring or whatever will happen with NPI and their reflective period now, and kind of a hold or a waiting for some CDCs and some funders and that. After all that, though, with this being out and with Kathy and Norm's conversations and then the report, what is there anything that's left as seen as a gap or something that maybe fell through that might even emerge into the discussions now? And it could be on either the community side or funding side.
I think my answer would be people like Frank Ford, Tony Brancatelli, who used to run the Solid Voice Club, who's now city council person, are still caught up in dealing with the never-ending foreclosure abandonment crisis. There may be some folks who have other ideas. An interesting foundation, to my knowledge, trying to represent the foundation. They attended that summit, but were silent. So, until the foundations make their view on that, if the initiative or the tax levy fails in November, I'm not sure what the mayor is going to say about the future of Cleveland, since he's like a head of the future version, if that doesn't happen. It's going to be a pretty tough sell to convince CDCs to work with a school district that can't pass a tax levy after 18 years and just got fairly raised in the category for the school. I haven't heard of any, other than the urban agriculture use of vacant land, that's continuing to a national model for that. That's good. That's not going to create a lot of jobs. We are creating jobs for refugees. We have Bhutanese farmers in the Ohio City District working with the Great Lakes Brewery, growing great stuff with the help of the Amish plowing the ground. The county land bank is resettling refugees and rehab abandoned homes, all of them so far. So there is little. I haven't heard of any, shall we say, large scale or other ideas other than those. I'm open to suggestions. I'll take them back.
Are the universities or the, you know, the giant healthcare systems playing a role in economic development in any way, shape, or form, or are they just sort of as typical, rather insular, and saying this is really bad?
Well, the former county treasurer, who virtually created the idea of the county land bank before we changed the county government to your system, I did our massive political corruption in the last several years, said that the Cleveland Clinic, the world famous Cleveland Clinic, whose latest campus is in Abu Dhabi, should contribute some money. I guess that's been issued here in Pittsburgh, pilot money voluntarily to the city of Cleveland. Property taxes to help out the poor Cleveland public schools. And Toby Cosgrove, whose brainchild was the medical mart, which will accompany our new convention center, to which they haven't contributed a dime that I'm aware of. Basically, the answer was, we employ thousands of people, they pay city income taxes. What are you talking about? So, although they have done this small scale program, they are providing, like Detroit's Midtown, people just up to 15,000. So if you work for the clinic or another institution, the circle is participating, they would give you $15,000 as a down payment to buy a house in one of these neighborhoods around the university circle and the clinic, or they would subsidize your rent for a year. I think the last report is maybe 40 people have done that, so I think they would say we've done that. On the other hand, when they get emergency cases at the clinic, guess where they send them? The county hospital, for the most part. So, no, they... what their argument is. We are the growth center of Cleveland, and as long as we're there, we're employing lots of people, we're doing our city doing.
Any other questions? Well, Dennis, thank you very much. Oh, all right, Bill.
I don't know if this is a take home for you or not, but you have to have a souvenir. I think this is an accurate Ernie test, but there's one, probably other, one significant neighborhood here. What a nonprofit at the center of its planning, along with Target and Home Depot and Whole Foods and all the rest of the housing, that we need some community service, nonprofit human service presence in the center. I'm thinking, nonprofit organization was urged and even given some assistance by the CDC to grab this piece of land in the center of, here's Target, and here's a piece of land which everybody was salivating over, and which could have been a big box something else. But now it's going to be in this community center. And so you got this particular organization that goes from a 15-location human service organization to actually a new neighborhood center. The new version of a settlement house. At the center of, not just the center of geographically, but the center of the planet. And I think that's unique across the country. It may be also that this particular, which is largely a homeless series, is one of the few new structures from the ground up rather than a rehab of a building within the structure. So I just wonder if that hasn't happened, maybe that's
technology. We actually have an example.
It probably has. I'm happy to be
approved.
We're not the only one.
In Kathy Newman's report, they mentioned the Fairfax neighborhood, which is the partner of the Cleveland Clinic. They managed to get a new headquarters in which they persuaded the county government to basically finance building and occupy part of it. So it's not totally unusual. I would welcome any feedback about what is happening here that affects the future roles of CDCs. Or are you contemplating any major changes or funding sources? Or obviously, your situation.
I can take a stab at some of the recommendations that came out of the most recent report that are being looked at. A couple big things are that it's about complete communities. And it's not just a real estate-focused strategy. And so, as Phil was talking about a little bit earlier, is there's this real need to bond supportive services and social service agencies, workforce, as well as community economic development together if we're really going to make a change in our region as a city and as a whole. I think for the first time we're thinking, instead of just Pittsburgh, we're thinking municipalities also urban, which are the first ring suburbs, because it's the largest geographic land area, as well as population and jobs, and it's also the most complete transportation system. I would say that the intermediary discussion is probably still on the table, and we're not really sure where that's going to go, but there's a lot of people trying to figure out who's going to be sort of the chosen child. We're not really sure. I mean, government provides a significant amount of resources still for the community development system, much like Cleveland. And I think what we're trying to do is get to a standard evaluation process and a standard rating system so that we can actually really count the outcomes from the system, which have been pretty skewed all over the place with different metrics of measurement. But overall, it was a real eye-opener to the investment into talent development and talent attraction for the system. because a lot of the talent has sort of moved up into leadership roles within government and other companies, but we've not created the legacy or the sort of succession planning for what's the next generation. And I think, you know, Cleveland being a little more flat than Pittsburgh, the vacancy is much more evident in Cleveland. Where we lost vacancy, it was in our hillsides, and a lot of it went back to green, except for neighborhoods like Larmer, Homewood, when you start to see really big abandoned blocks. Overall, I think we're still in the same boat as you. The difference might be Pittsburgh's got a different market. I know that the universities and the health systems are playing a big role in discussion around what are the future of neighborhoods and part of the job creation to help and keep neighborhoods driving. So I think we gotta think of ourselves differently today on what are the nodes of quality of life and how we sort of move forward.
I should have mentioned the community development director for the city of Cleveland is MPI, former staff director. The mayor's development advisor used to run the Cleveland Housing Network, and before that he worked for Shore Bank, and before that he directed the CDC. So there are a lot of, as opposed to political lobbying by the CDC, they have access to the government insofar as the organization has resources. There's also suggestions in this assessment of MPI that maybe they should take a more regional view, and this should be more transparent. They should become the lobbying voice for CDCs as opposed to the Cleveland Neighborhood Development Coalition. Maybe that's what they do with a merge. The person who directs the organization would become a more NPI-related or based person.
Yeah. The only other thing I think I would probably add to that is I don't think we're going to create the sort of super CDCs or the or assume that we're going to be able to centralize talent like we used to. You know, and East Liberty is probably an anomaly. It's a 25-year investment strategy, and it took 25 years to make a change. We don't have that kind of time for some of the neighborhoods on edge, and it's really looking at a much more nimble system of change.
Good. Anything else? Thanks, Dennis.